Hi everyone, my name is Andra Stanoyou and you're listening to the Healthy Debate Show here on UK Health Radio, the Real Feel Good Radio. In any given week in England, 8 in 100 people are diagnosed with mixed anxiety and depression. 6 in 100 people are diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder. The most severe anxiety condition amongst men was generalized anxiety disorder, with 52% of those with this condition having severe symptoms that would warrant medication or psychological therapy. This was the same for women, with 42% of them with generalized anxiety disorder experiencing severe symptoms. Today, we will discuss about anxiety with Samantha Gardner, renowned speaker, trainer on mental health and special needs. Sam is a qualified educational assessor, a CBT therapist, child and adolescent counselor. Hi, Samantha. Welcome to the Healthy Debate Show.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you for having me on. Very excited to be here today.
Very excited indeed. I know you have an awful lot of experience working with anxiety and depression, and because your experience is so varied, I'm just very interested in listening to your thoughts on anxiety and what we can do to, you know, shift this in
Absolutely.
Our minds and provide some maybe self-care or why not the magical solution, if there is any.
And it's so, very current at the moment, Andrew, coming out of, you know, COVID and a lot of people experiencing heightened anxiety, even if it's not enough to sort of qualify as a medical condition.
It is indeed, and definitely in my day-to-day job, I'm observing this more and more. Even if, you know, people don't come with a diagnosis, the knowledge, I would say, has significantly increased around mental health, anxiety, depression. What is it? How does it feel? You know, the signs, the recovery around that. So I think people are more, slightly more comfortable to start talking about this without having a psychiatric diagnosis. But before we go into the topic for today, I would like to know more about yourself, your professional background.
Well, I am a middle-aged woman. I live in South Devon in the UK. I originally started music. I'm a trained classical musician. And then I worked in the commercial sector in recruitment and in project management. And then I went into education. My children were born and I moved into the education arena and found that I had sort of an affinity in special educational needs and mental health. And I enjoyed that aspect. So I took more qualifications, and really about, I think 10, 11 years ago, I went freelance. And since then I've been working freelance with a variety of organizations, and I've published a book and writing magazines, and I've also developed my own CBT programs to help people manage their own happiness and their own mental well-being, make it more accessible to everybody. And that's where I am now, really. I'm still like singing. I sing. I have an alter ego where I do a bit of a cabaret act in South Devon a few times a year, and just loving life, really. But I do suffer with depression, and it's something I've suffered on and off with for about 20 years. So I manage that through a variety of methods as well. So I have lived experience.
Well, thank you very much for sharing this. We were talking before the show that it's not an easy thing to share personal experiences, and I do very much appreciate that you're very open with your stories. And I think it's good not just to have academic experience, professional experience, but also to experience to some extent. I think people can relate better with you when you speak from the heart, almost. Not that you don't have to have anxiety necessarily to speak from the heart, but I think it does make people feel a bit more comfortable and reassured that you exactly know how they're feeling, and you might potentially have the solutions for them. I struggle with anxiety, quite severe anxiety, and I know how hard it is to, you know, be on both sides, be someone who has knowledge around the topic, but find themselves in a bit of a struggle when it comes to managing personal emotions and being in the world in a way that you don't really feel like being sometimes.
Yeah, you kind of feel like, do you know, I should know this. I should know what I'm doing. You know, I'm a professional in this and it shouldn't be happening. But that's not how mental health and well-being works.
No, I wish it was.
But it would be great, wouldn't it?
It would. But I also think that, you know, it's a good moment for people like us who have a bit of, you know, experience in this field to take a step back and to understand that at the end of the day, shame has no place in this. Not about being vulnerable. It's about being what someone told me at some point when I was, you know, not in my best moments. It's about being human, you know, recognizing this and just embracing the fact that, you know, there are solutions. Might not be immediate. It might not be the only one, or it might not be the magical one, but there are some options there. So let's start talking about anxiety. What exactly is anxiety, Sam? Because some of us love a bit of self-diagnose, isn't it? Google, help. What exactly is anxiety?
Anxiety is kind of a fear of the unknown. And it is actually a very... First of all, everybody has it, and it's vital that we have it. It's something that developed over millions and millions of years in animals and in human beings. It's about a fear of the unknown and the fear of something happening. And it triggers actually a biological response in us to make us physically stronger to meet a threat, something happening. So it has a purpose, even if the threat or what we're anxious about isn't physical, it still stimulates a physical response in us. So it is about fear of the unknown and not what is going to happen, sort of being in less in control. And you can have excited anxiety. You know, you can have it. The official term is kind of eustress, where it's like, I have anxiety because I'm having a big party. But I am a little bit excited anxiety as well, that I don't know what's going to happen. But I think to sum it up, it would be worrying about things that you can't control. And yeah, I think that's it, really. Anxiety is worrying about things that you can't control.
So how do we come to this realization? Because it's quite a big step to identify that, you know, I might be projecting in the future some things that are not really real. What are some common symptoms of anxiety?
Well, it's the constant fear of dread. A big one is catastrophizing. So that really has a major impact. We'll probably talk later on this. It has a major impact on the level of anxiety you feel. So the more you catastrophize and consider negative possible outcomes, it's almost the worst your anxiety is going to be. So that has a big impact on the level of anxiety you feel. And like I said, you will have physical symptoms because it triggers a physical response in us. So palpitations, sweating, you know, one of the things anxiety does is stop your digestive system working. Your mouth stops producing saliva, so you have a dry mouth. Your stomach stops producing bile, so you stop processing food. Your colon stops processing food. So that's why we have symptoms, you know, such as dry mouth and sickness and maybe diarrhea or constipation or stomach cramping. So those are the symptoms. The key is understanding kind of almost, there's no such thing as normal anxiety, but when it becomes an issue, is when you have to look at, right, I need to do this now. So like I said, everybody has anxiety. Absolutely perfectly normal. I had anxiety before this podcast, and so it's perfectly normal. The issue comes is when it stops you doing things, when it becomes irrational, when it has a negative impact on your life and also on your physical health. That is kind of the step to think, okay, this could be an issue. I need help supporting this. It's stopping me doing these things.
What causes anxiety? And I'm going to explain why am I asking you this. It seems that a lot of the times anxiety comes when you're feeling fine, when you're in a happy place. Especially for me, this is how it works. I become very anxious suddenly without no specific reason. when I'm with friends, when I'm quite all right. I seem to be much better when I'm very stressed, for example, which is the opposite. So I'm just thinking, what can cause anxiety? Is this like a known driver or input, or what can be the answer, do you think?
Well, I mean, in terms of what you're saying, Andra, it may be that it feels to you that, you know, I'm with friends, I've got no reason to be anxious. But even when you're relaxed, your brain, your amygdala is scanning your environment at all times to discover, actually, is this a threatening situation or not? And then what can happen with panic disorder, a lot of people say, you know, the anxiety appears out of nowhere. But in many cases, there may be a smell or somebody triggers a word, and that can then trigger your sort of panic response in your body without being aware of it, and then just thinking about it. So panic disorder then becomes having a panic attack about thinking about having a panic attack, worrying about it. It can sort of trigger it. So one of the ways anxiety is sort of being dealt with is trying to change how you think about it. So some of how you think. So when you said, I can deal with it when I'm stressed, but I can't deal with it when I'm friends, you are sort of preparing your brain to be anxious when you're with friends, but not when you're stressed. Yeah. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely.
So it's kind of like, what we think is what will happen. And so that's why a lot of the effective therapies working around anxiety is about changing how you think about it, so it has less of an impact.
I think lots of our listeners are struggling with anxiety, and this topic is not chosen randomly. And I'm just thinking about childhood experiences, for example. Do you think that anxiety can have the roots in childhood experiences?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. Absolutely, 100%. What happens is it's all to do with kind of cognitive biases. So we all have cognitive biases, and one of the natural ones we have is to remember negative events and negative instances more easily than remember positive events. So if as a child you had a traumatic experience around food or choking, you know, swimming, anything like that, that then, and you felt unsafe, that then becomes a sort of protected pathway in your brain. And you sort of practice that, oh, I don't want that to happen again, so I must avoid food, or I must avoid swimming pools, or I must avoid this, that, and the other. So that then becomes a practiced, embedded thought process, because we remember the negatives, we will remember the one or two times it happened more than we will remember the thousands of times it didn't happen. That's a normal, natural sort of cognitive bias we have. But there's also a lot of anxiety comes from, we get ideas of, well, ultimately, we all want to be lovable, okay? And that is our big desire after your physical safety, is to be loved and belong. And what happens is we, as children, get perceptions of what makes us lovable at a young age from the adults and the people around us and the environment we're around us. And we develop that perception that I'm not going to be lovable if this happens. So for a lot of people, the anxiety comes around that. So whatever you believe you're not potentially lovable because of, your anxiety can develop around that. So if it's public speaking, I have a fear of looking stupid and saying the wrong thing and people laughing at me because that means I'm less lovable. If you have body anxiety, it's because maybe you were body shamed as a young person. So you grow up being that you're not lovable because of your body. So you're going to avoid any situations where you have to show anything about your body. So this is kind of a very simplistic view, but the roots are very much in our childhood. We can still get it as adults. So we kind of had a perfect childhood or a childhood where we didn't grow those issues. But if we had a traumatic event that happened to us as an adult, it's perfectly normal and understandable to then develop an anxiety around not wanting that to happen again in the future.
Do you think anxiety can suddenly disappear without doing the work?
It may be if you're subconsciously, something will change, something has to change. So either your environment or the way that you think, and you may not always be aware of that happening. Yeah. It just sort of disappears into the background, doesn't become as important because other things become important. So I don't think it magically goes away. I just think sometimes we may not be aware of what the change was for it not to happen.
Tell us about the most used coping mechanisms.
There's one of the biggest things to do with anxiety is cognitive behavioral therapy. There's also what's grown out of cognitive behavior therapy are third wave therapies, which use cognitive behavior therapy as the basis, but have slightly modified it or adapted it. And it is about changing how you think. That's one of the biggest actual forms of therapy for anxiety. You can also have medication for anxiety. So anxiety is often linked with depression. And so there are some antidepressants which have been known to help anxiety as well. They look at changing the sort of chemical balance in your brain. And there is anti-anxiety medication that you can have, because for some people, the fear of the physical symptoms is worse than the anxiety thoughts. And so there are drugs out there like beta blockers, which actually stop the physical symptoms because they stop you producing the adrenaline and the cortisol, which is a natural reaction for us. So I actually had somebody who had such overwhelming anxiety, and I recommended he spoke to his doctor. We tried some CBT techniques and he had them all, but having getting over that initial physical reaction, he found really, really difficult. So he got some propranolol from the doctor, and this blocked his adrenaline and cortisol response. So he could then remain calm and use the CBT activities. And he literally used it for about 2 weeks, and then he didn't need it. And he felt much less anxious because he had broken the cycle of the physical responses and felt more in control. So it really is kind of personal to everybody. What is going to work for you? What is going to help you? As I say, so CBT is a big one. Medication's a really good one. A lot of self-help is also very good for anxiety. A lot of self-help books and techniques are good.
I've heard some of my friends who do suffer also from anxiety that when tablets were proposed to them, they almost took it as a personal failure, not being able to control their own emotions. So how do we go around that, Sam?
It's a stigma, and it is this stigma of around mental health. Now, the more we study and the more we discover about mental health, we discover that actually it's biological and it is so linked to our physical health. It's absolutely incredible. And this concept of failure, I have experienced it myself, because as I say, there are times I take medication, I take citalopram for my depression, and then I come off it and it's successful, and then I'll maybe go into trouble. I'm like, oh, but if I go on drugs again, I failed. But it's not, it's a form of technique that works for me, because there is some evidence to say that there is a hereditary element to things like anxiety and depression. So, and it's a case of if somebody got diabetes or had a headache, or you wouldn't go, oh, I'm not going to take a tablet for that because it means I've failed. It is exactly the same concept. Do what works for you. Life is hard enough. And my big saying is, don't pick up more sticks to beat yourself with. And, you know, there are times my life is busy. I've got 3 kids. I was working full time. Yes, I probably could fit in more CBT activities. I could fit in more self-care, but I didn't have the opportunity to do that at that time. Medication worked for me. I took the medication. I would take the medication if ever I need to do it. I'm not somebody who, I don't want to suffer in my life. Why should I? Why should I suffer? I'm
going to do something that makes
my life easier. Yeah. Do something that makes your life easier. And I do think sometimes there's a little bit of element of sometimes the more you suffer, the better you are in society. And I see this, you know, I exercise through physical pain. You shouldn't be exercising through physical pain. That's damaging your body. And it's like people who have a badge because they had no pain relief when they had childcare. We don't do that with dentistry and having a tooth out. So why do you have a badge for that? Why should you have a badge not for being on medication if your mental health is suffering? Get on it. If it works for you, do it. Don't let other people dictate to you what works for you.
Sam, I completely didn't expect that. I'm so grateful you said that. That's very valuable because, you know, I didn't hear very often counselors or psychotherapists who are explaining what people should do in order to approach this in their own way. So it's very reassuring to hear your thoughts on this, because a lot of us are thinking, you know, is medicine the right response for me? And they're almost afraid to take that leap. What if I won't be able to stop and control my emotions? What if? But thank you. Thank you very much for that. That's okay. Very, very good to hear. You also mentioned self-help, and I really want to hear more about this. But let's take a few minutes of break to hear some valuable information from the sponsors, from the station sponsors. We'll be back soon.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And we're back with Samantha Gardner. Samantha is a qualified educational assessor, CBT therapist, a child and adolescent counselor. I can go on and on and on. I tried to pick up some of your titles from your website. But going through your website, I've also seen various resources for self-help, Sam. Tell us a bit about the most effective resources that can support us in our journey with anxiety. You did mention a few, but I know you have some good ones on the website, so I somehow want people to connect with that.
I do, and there's going to be more coming, and I do it. I think anything based around cognitive behavior therapy works. So even just the most simplest activity, one of the most effective are the most simplest. So whenever you have an anxiety, very often what we do is we just catastrophize, and we are so fearful of an outcome, we lose logical thought. And so one of the simplest things to do is when you have the anxiety, go, just stop and go, right, I'm feeling the anxiety. That's okay. That's normal. And if you have physical symptoms, they will pass. This is temporary. And then saying, what actually am I worried about? And how likely is it to come true? Because the vast majority of anxieties are related to things that never have actually come true. We just become fixated on the idea that they may come true. So it's a case of changing how you think about it. So it's kind of how likely is what I've worried about come true? How many times has it not come true? Let's put that into perspective, because I mentioned the negative cognitive bias that we have. And it's a case of reminding yourself how many times it hasn't come true. Okay. So, you know, I used to struggle with imposter syndrome. You saying about all my qualifications and things on my website, and I'd still be like, I don't know anything. I'm a fraud. People are going to find out. So how I would manage it would be a case of, what is your fear that's going to happen? And it's going to be that people don't agree with me, or people say, I don't know what I'm talking about. And so how many times has that actually come true? You know, particularly in the public speaking arena. And to my knowledge, none. But if it's so I'm worried about, I have something I have 100% success rate at. And even if it had come true a few times, most people still have a higher than 90% success rate. So just by turning it around and going, do you know, I'm worried about something I have a 90% success rate in. Keep changing that thought. Keep rewiring the brain to think that. And then actually have a plan. What will I do if it does happen? I'll apologize. I maybe won't charge the fee. I'll make sure that I know better next time. And ultimately, I will be okay. Because what happens when we have the fear of the anxiety, we cannot get past the idea that something bad is going to happen and that it's going to be awful and absolutely awful. So we need to go past that and say, actually, how likely it is to happen and what will I do if it does happen? And do you know what? You'll be okay. You'll be okay. You will be okay. And it's a case of then having to keep repracticing that and changing your thought process around it. And then that stops triggering it stops the anxiety becoming unmanageable, and it stops it interfering in your life. Yeah. I was going to move on to something else there, but yeah, I'll come back to that.
Absolutely. So you mentioned that sometimes you have a look at your website, your achievements, and you're thinking, you know, I don't know a thing. Yeah. So let's talk about imposter syndrome. What comes first, anxiety or imposter syndrome? What's the order?
I think it's a little bit, I think imposter syndrome is a form of anxiety. There's lots of anxieties out there. It's very common in the education sector, which I went into, where there's always a higher qualification that somebody could have more than you. And so it's like, I thought, do you know what I'm going to do? I've either got to publish a book or I've got to do a PhD. Right. Okay. Which is easier? Publishing a book. Right. Okay. So I'll publish a book and then I'll think, right, it's I've sorted it. I won't feel like an imposter. So I published my book and I'm like, well, anybody can publish a book, you know. It's not really that big a deal. So I was discounting it. So then I was like, I need a PhD. And then I met somebody with like 5 masters and 2 PhDs, and they still felt they weren't good enough. Yeah. And I thought, it's actually not about the PhD. It's actually not about the book. It's about how you think about it. And so how I then changed my mind, and I thought, you know, not everybody's going to agree with me. Not everybody's going to agree with my approach. And that's absolutely fine. My approach is very much more simple and straightforward than somebody who may have more qualifications than me. But that's fine. We don't have to connect with everybody in the whole world. Not everybody has to like me. I don't like everybody, but I quite like myself. So it was a case of, yeah, it was a case of just reminding myself of that and, you know, increasing profile on social media means you're going to get criticism. Okay. So I'm going to get criticized. I don't care. You know, I don't walk past somebody in the street and I wonder, what do they think of me? Do they like me? And social media is just the same thing. You know, is it a valid criticism? Is it not? I'm going to move on. So I'm continually working on my mindset because that's something we have to do. It's a case of with anxiety. You're not going to cure it. You're not going to get rid of it ever. So that's an unrealistic thought. What you will do is you will manage it. And you would deal with it. And I have the confidence that I can deal with what is thrown my way and I'll be okay.
I was thinking what you were talking about, the pressure to succeed, because quite a few things that you've mentioned, they were on my agenda for a long period of time, always thinking, you know, am I doing well enough? Can I add something else? Can I add something else? Can I add something else? And I'm constantly adding something else and something else. But some things just don't go away. They still stay with me because they're very, very much embedded in the way I'm thinking about myself and the expectations I have. Because I would never put this type of pressure on anyone around me.
No.
I wouldn't. I would treat everyone else, you know, with respect. I'll be gentle, I'll be understanding, reasonable. But when it comes to ourselves, there's a totally different story. So the pressure to succeed, to be the best, to be constantly achieve, it's quite frequent in today's society. Yeah. And I know that you have quite a few clients who are struggling to cope with this pressure.
Yeah.
So tell us a few examples when you managed to identify what was the cause for that anxiety. What were some of the techniques that you approached in therapy, and what was the outcome?
So what you're talking about is the way you deal with your anxiety is very, very common, and it's kind of going for a temporary fix.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than actually addressing the cause of the anxiety, you're looking for a temporary fix. Right, I'm going to get this qualification and then I'm going to feel okay. I get the qualification, or I do that. Actually, I don't feel okay. I need to go to the next level and then I'll feel okay. And it's a temporary sort of release. So I had a client who has health anxiety, and it was very much a case of, and I say client, it was my daughter. Okay. So even me as a medical, as sort of a mental health practitioner, my daughter has anxiety, and she had health anxiety that became quite overwhelming for her. To the fact that she would constantly be ringing me and saying, "Mum, will you look at this? Is it cancer? Will you look at this mole? Mum, I've got stomach pains. I think it might be an ulcer." And she would do the classic Google and come up with the worst case scenarios. So what I initially did was I reassured her, and no, it's not. You're okay. Okay, thank you. But what I was doing is I was just temporarily giving her relief, but not fixing the actual problem. So it came to a point where I said to her, "I'm not going to tell you that. Let's look at why you're feeling anxious about it. Let's look at what is underpinning this." And, you know, you shouldn't counsel people that are close to you, so I don't. But she got some sort of counseling around that anxiety. And it helped with her. She now manages her health anxiety. She does have slips, as we all do, but she manages it. But her health anxiety was so bad that it manifested in physical symptoms that doctors thought she had a stomach ulcer and she had exploratory treatment. This is the power that anxiety has over us physically. So she very much, so it is a case of not giving temporary relief, but actually looking at the causes of it. So it's about me as a counselor. I'm not going to reassure you. I'm going to look at the issues and look at ways to help you manage what you're thinking instead. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought this example up, because usually what happens is the other way around. Parents get very anxious about their children's health. So I think your position in this was twice as challenging, because you are first a professional and then you are a mom, and you're thinking with your two hats almost, like, what if there's a problem?
Yeah.
What if I'm making it worse because I'm ignoring something that might be real? Which one is it?
Oh, being a parent, you just sign up for guilt. Your whole life is just, you know, whatever. What have I done wrong now? You know, especially as I did parenting courses and then I did more mental health, I was like, oh, I shouldn't have done that as a parent. But, you know, there's good enough parenting and my children are fabulous, and that's all that counts.
Absolutely. And because you mentioned children and parenting, I'm just thinking, how do we help our children grow up in an environment that's safe enough for them not to become anxious, because you also mentioned genetics. So if I'm an anxious mom, for example, how do I keep that away from my child?
There is an element of genetics in it. There's also an element of learned behavior. And you asking about parents at the moment is really, really, really relevant, because I get so many schools contacting me currently saying, look, parents are saying they've got terrible anxiety about exams, terrible anxiety about coming to school, and they're not going to send them in. Okay. Because as a parent, we love our child. We want what is absolutely best for them, and we want to protect them from any hurt and difficulty that they may have. But sometimes what we're doing isn't helpful. So the key with anxiety is avoidance is a safety behavior. Okay, so safety behaviors are things that you do to try and reduce your level of anxiety. But by avoiding things, you're not managing the anxiety, because it's a case of stepping out of your comfort zone. So the example I kind of like to use, I like watching programs about hoarders, particularly in America, where they hoard. So I love the before and after. And the hoarder, something's happened which has made them feel unsafe. There's usually a big triggering event, and they won't throw things away, which is anxiety or a fear of making the wrong decision. So they won't throw things away. That's a very simplistic view, but they won't throw things away. So this whole debate then happens to throw the first thing away. And it's a big issue, because their anxiety is telling them, if you throw this away, it could be catastrophic to your life. That is the link they have made in their brain. And for the rest of us, we're like, it's a plastic bag. Throw it away. Throw it away. But for them, it's a big issue. So they throw the plastic bag away. They have a reaction, but they come out okay the other side. And this is usually where it steps. If they acknowledge, I did it and it was okay, then the next one's a little bit easier, and the next one's a little bit easier, and the next one. And literally in about 10 minutes, they're going, yeah, just chuck it all in the bin. That's how it works with the program. So with trying to protect our children with anxiety, we're actually making it worse for them. It's like we are reducing their comfort zone level. And sometimes we've got to say, just do it. How you are feeling is anxious, absolutely, but by avoiding it, you're not going to stop that. Let's talk about, what are you anxious about? What could happen? What were you doing in that situation? But go and do it. Because the more you do it, the less anxious you are. So public speaking, I could do it standing in my head, because I've done it so many times. I don't have any anxiety about that at all. Well, a little bit, but you know, it doesn't stop me. So with parents, sometimes look at, actually, what am I doing? Whilst I want to protect them for hurt, actually, am I damaging them in the long run? The best way is to teach them to manage their anxiety. So if you talk through anxieties, I'm really worried about this, but this is what I'm going to do, and this is what I'm going to tell myself instead, and this is what's going to happen. And don't, it's not a case of forcing them to do, but encouraging them to do it with a safety net rather than avoiding it altogether.
It's almost like normalizing the sensations, their physical reactions and their emotions,
yeah,
rather than, you know, putting it in a box and not touching that.
And that's it. Your anxiety is completely normal, which is why I talk about the physical effects of anxiety are perfectly normal. And if you understand them and know that they're not sort of life-threatening and that it will pass, well, you know, one of the treatments for panic disorders is to go, it's okay, let's keep going through it. It will pass. And you know, and preparing them for that rather than avoidance.
So let's take a few minutes of break to hear more about to hear some commercial messages. And when we're back, I really want us to, you know, close by looking at family support. And I have one more question that I am dying to hear you answer.
Okay.
So let's come back in a few moments.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And we're back with Samantha Gardner. Sam, really keen to hear your thoughts on the following. Is anxiety addictive? Can you find it very hard to leave that behind? Because it might get to a point when the benefits of it can be so big that what do I do with this, without this? How will I be noticed without my anxiety?
Well, that's it. You're exactly right. There's two sort of aspects to that. The first one is that whilst I have the anxiety, I'm comfortable with my anxiety because it's a known thing. Mm-hmm. If I change my behavior and I'm not anxious, I don't know what that's going to feel like. So I feel anxious about that. So it's a case of, do I want to? And I'm comfortable where I am. The second one is actually, yes, with some people, sometimes anxiety is the only way that they're noticed, or they get attention from other people. And negative attention is better than no attention. There's nothing worse than feeling ignored and people don't know you exist and don't care about you. So if by having anxiety, I saw it in school, working in school, there were children that were fine, run of the mill. I don't like the word run of the mill, but middle of the road, they were doing okay. But of course, they didn't get the attention. They weren't the top flyers and they weren't the sort of behavior problems. So they weren't getting attention and they were being overlooked. But by having an anxiety, oh, don't worry about it. It meant they suddenly got attention and they suddenly mattered. So it's a case of yes. And this is one of the reasons why as a therapist, or any life changing, any life coaching, anything, the biggest thing you need to look at is the motivation to change. Do you want to change? Because I can only help you change if you want to change. And what is your motivation to change? If you have no motivation to change, nothing's going to change.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it can be addictive, isn't it?
Yeah.
It can be addictive from the benefits perspective almost.
Yeah, totally.
Who am I without my anxiety? Who am I without my symptoms? Yeah, that's very, very interesting. And because we're getting close to the end of the show, and as you said, you know, the families are really struggling and anxiety is a real problem. And I'm glad that we're starting to talk more about this and normalize it. What are some of the things that families can do to families in general, right? So I'm not referring to parents or just families in general. How can they support a family member that's going through an anxiety, I don't even know how to call it, event or, you know, moment?
Firstly, you have to listen and understand them. And your job's not to fix it. Okay, so even when I'm supporting people, unless they ask for my help, I won't give them help. Does that make sense? And yes, the first thing I will do is I will listen and acknowledge how they're feeling. We're very, very dismissive. We're very bad at taking on other people's perceptions. We always view it with our own mindset, but that's not something I'm worried about. So don't be utterly ridiculous. And that's not what you have to do. You have to acknowledge what they're going through and what they're feeling and not dismiss it, not trivialize it, not shame them for it, because it is real. It is their perception and nobody else can tell them what is going on and whether that's right or wrong, because nobody else has lived the life they have. Nobody else's brain is wired in that way. So it's a case of be there and listen and then say, how can I help? what can I do? And, you know, don't always say, have you tried this? Because, you know, whenever I talk about depression, I have alopecia. So people go, oh, that stress, have you tried this? I'm going, listen, I've tried everything and it's fine. I'm okay with it. So that's a case of just hear them, hear what they're saying, acknowledge what they're saying. Your job is not to fix it. Your job is to support in whatever way, shape that comes. But also consider, is my behavior enabling? Excuse me. Am I enabling them by saying, you know, constantly saying, oh, don't worry about it. Am I enabling that behavior? Do I then need to say, okay, have you thought about it? Have you rationalized it? It sounds really hard. Yeah, just to listen to them and to consider, am I enabling this in some way? Am I helpful or am I harmful? And a lot of cases, it's about, there's a big thing called discomfort tolerance in anxiety. And it's about increasing your ability to feel discomfort, to feel uncomfortable and be okay with that. Because a lot of anxiety is, as soon as we feel a little bit of discomfort, we run away. We want to avoid it. So it's about increasing someone's ability just by little steps to feel uncomfortable and be okay with that and not let it stop you doing anything.
Sam, thank you so much for your time today. It's gone so fast. I still had quite a few questions, but thank you very much for your honesty and for bringing your experience, your expertise into this conversation. I'm glad that we managed to hopefully had an almost informal conversation about anxiety, because sure, it's not about the philosophical aspect of it, isn't it? It's about feelings, it's about people, real life situations. So thank you very much again.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking me.
And I would like us to be able to get in touch with you, find you online. So tell us about your website and any other social media links.
So I have a website called samanthagarner.co.uk with various resources on there. I'm on Facebook. I have a page called Samantha Garner. And I mean, you can link all this from my website. I have Twitter. I have LinkedIn. I am on Instagram, and I'm going to be doing a lot more. I'm going to be doing some Facebook lives, releasing some more podcasts on my own around little issues, and just having conversations with people and trying to give realistic support to people to help them manage their own mental well-being, to empower people to feel better about themselves.
We wish you best of luck. I'm sure you'll do fantastic. It sounds like you're everywhere these days. So it's a bit more than a book, writing just a book, Sam, isn't it?
I know.
You almost get a PhD in social media, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
Well, all the best. And we hope to have you soon back.
Thank you, Andra. Thank you, everybody.
Help is an iconic song by an iconic band, the Beatles. It's a song that's very easy to read as being about feelings of anxiety. Even Paul McCartney has gone so far as to confirm that the lyrics are based on real life, giving listeners a look into the emotions behind the songs. So until next time, may we hear only good things.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. You know I need someone. Help! When I was younger, so much younger.